The opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back to the show. Thanks for listening. This is Zach Abraham with Know Your Risk Radio, and we've got another special guest.
Yeah.
In the studio with
yes!
us.
Yes.
I'm sure they already know.
Special.
one of the favorite guys to have on the show, and we're going to be working closely with him, and he's been kind enough to endorse the firm, and want to take this opportunity to have Dory. I'm sure I don't even need to say your name. Hear that voice, the voice that rocks Seattle, as I refer to it.
Yes.
But needs no introduction, but we appreciate you being here. And
for someone who needs no introduction, this is the longest introduction ever.
Well, we got to roll out the red carpet.
Okay.
It's not every day. Usually I'm in here talking to myself.
Well, when you say that I'm kind enough to endorse the firm, it has nothing to do with kindness. It is about just a belief in how you do things. And, you know, I've told my listeners a lot that if I wasn't hosting a radio show, I'm fairly confident that I would have had a career in the financial field, and I was all set to do. I was going to make the change midstream back when it was about 29, 30. I hadn't gotten the talk show yet. I really had the bug. I took my GMATs. I was going to get my MBA and work in this field. And so it's an area that I'm passionate about for a lot of reasons. But first and foremost, Zach, is because I truly believe that we are in a constant daily battle for sovereignty over our life, for freedom.
Yep.
And that the forces that want a big chunk of our freedom are corporations and government. And the way we get that freedom is, especially if you start planning early, but you can do it anytime. But if you start planning early and you start laying out a pathway so that you are not as affected by the, you know, the whims of government, then truly you're on a pathway to freedom. So I'm passionate about it. And then, you know, why I've loved getting to know you and talking with you is because I know your approach. You're not somebody who, you know, sells people dreams. You just give them a plan. And so it's, you know, I appreciate you saying that I'm kind enough to endorse, but I've done a ton of research on this. I knew that this was a field that I wanted to work with and in, and I love the way you do business.
Well, thank you. Yeah, name of the show, Know Your Risk, and that's, you know, you and I have spent a lot of time talking about this,
yeah.
but that's the name of the game, and managing your risk, managing each individual investor's risk, and something that we were talking about before we came on the air that I think is imperative for your listeners and everybody to know, which is, you know, you hear so much of these different investment philosophies. You hear guys like Warren Buffett saying, never sell a stock. You hear people saying, own the index and ride it out. And look, we believe that people need to be exposed to the stock market. There's no question about that. We also believe that we know that we live in completely uncharted territory, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unseen times.
Yeah.
Unparalleled. And the thing that I try to tell everybody is, look, and again, going back to the conversation we were having off air, is, yes, what Warren Buffett talks about, buying and holding stocks for 30 years and all that, if our goal is to amass the biggest pile of money 30 years down the line, that's going to be a decidedly different investment approach than if we're a traditional investor looking to fund our retirement.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we can do if we're Warren Buffett and Berkshire Hathaway, the company that we're running, or our investment profile or portfolio, takes a 50% hit, it's a buying opportunity. It's not a big deal because it's a business. We're amassing a pile of money.
Sure.
But if we're living off that money in retirement, and that money needs to last us till we're 90 years old, then, like I tell clients all the time, you know, your portfolio can go down 50%. But the funny thing about life is, it doesn't usually correspond with your cost of living dropping 50% at the same time.
Right. Yeah. And I, you know, I talk with my three daughters a lot about this, and I do think that at their age, if they are diligent and they can ride out bumpy times and they make a monthly investment, however small it may be, because, you know, they're just out of college and they're in, you know, still their earliest earning years. But if they have the fortitude when there's a big market drop to say, I'm going to keep buying because everything's on sale now.
Right.
Then, yeah, I'm a big fan of dollar cost averaging and buying on a monthly basis when you're in your 20s and maybe even into your 30s, because you can ride out all the bumps. And we know what's going to happen over a 30-year period, or we have almost certainty of that. But, yeah, when you get to be my age, if I took a 50% hit right now, all of a sudden my retirement picture is dramatically altered. And so, yeah, you have to be flexible in how you adjust things. And I have to be more conservative for my family right now. And so that's what we're doing. Because like you said, you know, this Trump bump or whatever you want to call it, $1 trillion in wealth that's been added in the last month or so, it's great. I don't know how it can last. We are at such crazy high valuations right now.
Yeah. Well, you and I have spent a lot of time talking about this. And I had a client, actually, I had a conversation with a client yesterday, called me, and he just got back from vacation. And he was asking me, what do you think? Well, you know, and so, you know, I talk about on the radio all the time what I think about what's going on. So it's no news to any of the listeners. But what I was explaining to him was, look, I don't know how far it's going to go. Nobody does. If they tell you they do, they're lying to you and run the other way, mm-hmm. right? Could it keep going up? Yes. Yeah, it can keep rolling. But that's not what we're trying to do, right? We're not trying to maximize the pile of money that you've got. What we're trying to do is look at the field of options, look at every single different investment option, every way to invest our clients' money, and we're looking to maximize returns while minimizing risk.
Right.
And it's all about risk control. And the funny thing is on the institutional side, if we were sitting with a room full of hedge fund managers, 80% of the time would probably be talking about how they control risk and what their risk management models look like and how they do that, right? It's the quintessential part. But then you go listen to any financial advisor stand up on stage and you leave with the impression that bonds will make you between 5 and 5.5% and the S&P is going to go up 9.5% every single year. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many clients have heard that, right? Mm-hmm. And we can use that model if, like, we're talking about your daughters, or we're talking about accumulating money over the next 30 years. But when we enter retirement and we start spending, the approach needs to be completely different.
Oh, yeah, dramatically.
And then you add into where we're at. You know, like one of the things that we did with you, you know, there's easy things. For instance, we don't know how high the stock market's going to go, right? But, you know, call me crazy, call me a risk taker, but I'd be willing to bet anybody a very substantial amount of money that interest rates will be higher over the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. And if interest rates go higher, the bonds you currently own are going to lose money. If they go significantly higher, the bonds you currently own are going to lose a lot of money.
Yeah.
So what do we do there? We're locked into this. Then on top of that, bonds are paying us a record low amount of interest in the meantime, right? And so, you know, that's a perfect example of the way we approach things. We sit there and we go, okay, look at that bond money. Is it really helping us get to where we are? No, I mean, we're making an amount of interest that's less than the inflation rate. So what can we do? What can we do with that? Let's try to move it, since we're at the lowest interest rates in recorded history, literally going back 5,000 years, lowest interest rates in the history of mankind. We've had a great run in bonds. What can we do with that money to insulate it from what we know, the one thing we know is coming, which is higher interest rates?
Right.
We've got solutions for that. We've got solutions that will grow money faster than bonds and do a better job at protecting it. And anyway, you know, I'm preaching to the choir with you because we've spent a lot of time talking about this, but it's about risk management. It's about sitting there saying, look, if we know that we're going to reach our retirement goals, if we're generating 6.5% to 7% annual returns on average,
mm-hmm.
then let's figure out a way to do that with taking the least amount of risk. It seems normal to say that. But everybody's so locked in. These advisors have pounded into these people's heads that you got to own stocks, you got to own bonds, you got to hold them forever. You don't.
Yeah.
That's not true.
Well, and my listeners know I enjoy gambling, but there are some things I don't gamble on. And that's taking care of my family as I approach, you know, retirement in 10 or 15 years or however long they're going to let me do what I do. But, yeah, I mean, that's where I become not afraid of risk, but pragmatic about it. You know, I'll assume a little bit, but right now I got to protect my nest egg. It's funny. The product that you're going to put me in, my family in, I had been looking into that before you and I ever met. And so that was kind of cool that the area that I was already investigating was something that you have been talking about a lot with your clients. So I know we got to take a quick time out here, but we can talk more about all this stuff.
That's why it's nice to have you on the air, is I lost track of time.
That's
you're the professional here.
All
yeah, right. He's keeping me on track. All right, stick with us. We got another segment. Dory's going to stick around with us and continue our chat. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio on knowyourriskradio.com.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back to Know Your Risk Radio, and we've still got Dory with us. Thanks for sticking with us through the break.
Heck yeah.
And we are going to continue our conversation. For those who have just joined us, we're discussing how you and I got to be associated, you know, how you became a client, and the thought process that we had. And I wanted to let you speak a little bit about, we did a little bit on the last segment, but a little bit about what caught on with you and what sunk in with you and what attracted you, for lack of a better term.
I'll tell you a little story. I was 16 years old. I got a job at a print shop up on Capitol Hill, making $2.50 an hour, which was minimum wage at the time. And there was a guy who just would come around and have a cup of coffee in the morning. He was an insurance salesman. And he, you know, I'm 16. I'm a moron. I have no clue. I have no clue about finances. Grew up in poverty. And I'm thinking, well, maybe I can be some, big shot investor here. And so he talks me into 16. He talks me into a whole life insurance policy. And I was paying, it was like $30 a month, which was 2 days' salary working at this print shop operating a shrink wrap machine. And you know, he explained to me that it would have some cash value, and he was just smooth and I was gullible. And then as soon as I could get out of it, I got out of it, and I just threw away this money. I got scammed. Yeah. I got scammed. And so I always hated insurance as an investment vehicle.
Yeah.
I mean, never in a million years would I have considered that.
Yeah.
And then about a year ago, I read the book by investment. He's more a motivational guru, Tony Robbins. But he wrote this book called Money Mastering the Game. And I was fascinated by it because he interviewed some of the world's greatest investors, guys like Ray Dalio. And I think he did interview Buffett. And it was, it's truly the greatest at Templeton and just the best. And one of the things he started advocating was this annuity that sounded too good to be true. And I had a ton of skepticism going into this. But an annuity where you can get stock market upside, but not lose any of your principal.
Yep.
The trade-off and the reason you're not going to lose is because if the market goes up 20%, you might only get 10% of the upside. But if the market goes down 30%, you don't lose any of your money.
Right.
Which sounds too good to be true. But I started looking into it. And then when you and I met, Zach, that was a product that I knew you were talking to your clients about. It was one that I was already really keenly interested in. And, you know, as I've been working through this process, my wife and I sitting down with you, that's going to be a part, because I want stock market upside.
Yeah.
I mean, if it does keep going up, which is hard to imagine, but I could also see 30-40% correction.
Yeah.
Possibly. I hope not.
Yeah.
I don't want that to happen.
Yeah.
But if it does, I don't want to lose 40% of my nest egg 5 years before retirement because I don't have time to get it back then. So that was one of the things. And, you know, you can talk in more detail about it, but that's something that's going to be part of my plan. I know it's something when we did the seminar together a couple of months ago. That was something you talked about to all the people there. And it just makes a lot of sense for where I am in life right now.
Yeah, it's funny to hear you talk about it because I did the last thing I ever got into this business or got my finance degree for, or, you know, I was one of those guys who knew what I wanted to do at the age of five, which was this. At no point did I ever think I would be, quote unquote, selling insurance. I've always laughed. I can't remember which movie it was, but Woody Allen had a movie where part of the sketch in the movie was he was defining hell, and his definition of hell was being in a room stuck between two life insurance salesmen. and so I'm a stock junkie. I mean, I love managing money. It's the favorite part of what I do. But when 2008 was a game changer, and it was a game changer for a lot of reasons, and we've talked a lot about it on the radio show, and I think listeners, well, with both of us, I think they're pretty clear what our views are. But the game changed, and you look at a world with 0% interest rates and sovereign bonds trading in negative territory and all these anomalies, right? And we know by definition that they can't continue. You know, it's not like we're going out on a cliff saying, oh, this is going to come to an end. It already is. It's beginning to anyway, with interest rates moving higher. That's kind of the first move.
Yeah.
And when we started looking at this world in 2011, 2012, I first heard about these products in a search that I was doing to find a bond replacement for my clients. Because, and again, I've talked about this so much, but if I own an asset that it's at the highest valuation it's ever been in the history of mankind, and the cash flow, the cash stream that I'm getting from that asset is less than the rate of inflation, that's probably a good time to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean it's going to hell in a handbasket, but it's probably a good time to sell.
Yeah.
And so then you've got to figure out as a money manager, what do we do with this money? We can't let it sit there in cash. We got to find an alternative for our clients. And when I first heard about these products, I was skeptical as well too. I thought there was I thought it was a typical insurance, thing and sound too good to be true. And I took about a year researching them and really breaking them down. And, you know, like you and I spoke about, and I've talked with so many clients about, it's not perfect. There's no perfect investment, but every time I'm in front of a room of clients, every time I'm doing a seminar or talking in front of a group of people, I just out of curiosity, I always look at them and say, look, if I could offer you right now a portfolio or an investment that's going to average between 5 and 6.5% a year, or at least it has over the last 20 years, it has no annual expense fee, so you don't pay any cost, and it's guaranteed against loss, how many people would be interested? 100% of the hands go up every single time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we get great responses. You've been to one of our seminars. We get great responses. There's a part of me that's shocked that we don't get 100% of the people that come up there. Because any investor that currently owns bonds, there is something safer and better. And what I mean by safer and better is make you more money, guarantee you against loss, and cost you less than bonds right now. There is no rule that you need to be in bonds.
Right.
And this isn't all we do. I always get people go, oh, yeah, you're the annuity guy. And I'm like, God. No, that's actually the last thing I want to be in. And I look forward to the day where we no longer have to advocate annuities, Dory, when things get more normal and I feel like there's safe alternatives. But right now for clients, you know, we have a saying, and I love this saying. I should know who said it. I don't want to take it from them. But when we get to market cycles like this, one of the ways that you can always look at it when markets peak, you know, and there, again, it's no science. It's more art than science. But you get in an environment where people start caring more about the return on their money than the return of their money.
Mm-hmm.
And a guarantee against loss is far more valuable right now than most people recognize, especially when you're getting an interest rate or rate of return that's substantially higher than you can get bonds or banks or CDs.
Right.
And not to mention the fact that it's geared to the stock market, so you're naturally hedged against inflation.
Yeah.
You're protected against rising interest rates. And, you know, I parrot what you're saying, and I agree with you because I went through the same process sitting there going, this is too good to be true. But it's great to hear you say that because clients need to realize, I run into people all the time that if they had 5.5% or 6% returns, that's all they need.
Yeah.
And they've got 80% of their money in stocks.
Well, and if you had just come to me and pitched this, I don't, you know, and if I hadn't known you, but I've gotten to know you and what a good guy you are. But if a stranger came up to me and pitched this, I think I would have dismissed it. Mm-hmm. The fact that I had independently researched this, that I had reached the same conclusion, and then you were reinforcing some things that I had already discovered on my own. And that's why I'm excited to, you know, to tell this to listeners, because like I said, the reason I want to talk about this stuff is because I want people to be free. I want people to have a life where they can just pursue their passions and not be captive to having to serve some other masters. And so I'm really sincerely passionate about this. And I think these are scary times, but I think out of that can come some real exciting times if people get the right direction.
Yeah, you know, this is I don't want to get in too much investment talk, but you know, this isn't the only thing we do. Like I said, the primary thing that we do is, you know, manage money. That's why I got into this job to begin with. But the question that we come to is, how much money should clients have at risk? How much should they have in play? So that's part of our, you know, risk profile that we build for every single client. We sit there and go, look, let's put a moat around this amount of your assets here, because no matter what else happens, if this is intact, you're good to go.
Yeah.
And that's the way retirement planning should be done.
Yeah.
Right?
No, I like it.
We should start with the basics and work our way forward.
Yeah.
So
that's where I'm at. And it's fun working with you.
And it's been great working with you.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for being on the show. And I appreciate the kind words and look forward to more in the future.
Yep. We will keep it rolling here.
All right. Thanks a lot. And we're getting into it. Stick with us. Don't leave just because Dory's leaving. We're going to get into the market update, do our regular show and there's a lot to talk about. So stick with us. I don't even know where to start. I'll get that squared away during the break, but we got a ton coming up. Thanks for being with us. This is Know Your Risk Radio on knowyourriskradio.com.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back to Know Your Risk Radio. This is Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer of Bulwark Capital Management. And thanks for joining us. Where to start? We're going to start off, for those of you who've heard the podcast from the show before, we're going to start off with the market update, as we always do. And there's just a lot to talk about. Let's go down it one at a time. So things are still... I think where are we at on the Dow right now? Right around 20,800. We've had 11 straight positive closes on the Dow, which is a record. It's the longest streak in the history of America, period. It's pretty crazy. For those of you that have heard me, you know what my thoughts are. But this is also a perfect example. Let me just say, and I don't want to start preaching my book or pushing the way that we do things on you, because first and foremost, we're here to inform, and I'm here to give you the information and try to break it down so you understand what's going on, so you can take better control. I know for a fact that the majority of people that listen to me aren't clients. A small number are, and that's fine. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, we're not going to turn you down. If you want to call and be a client, we'd be more than happy to sit with you and do a free risk review, and we've talked about that a lot on the show. But, you know, if we do nothing else, just delivering the truth, just getting it out there so people have a better understanding of what's going on. And I just think it's imperative right now. There's a lot of things that are imperative. One of the things for my clients and my friends and listeners who are on the bearish side. So, and a lot of people think that I am. I'm not. I guess I'm directionally, I'm agnostic. We're value investors. We buy where there's value and we don't if there's not. So I don't try to make predictions about markets. And for that matter, nobody should. If anybody tells you, I'm sure most of you know this, if anybody tells you they know what's going to happen in a market, just walk away. Nobody does. But having said that, to the bearish friends out here, this is exactly why you don't try to time markets. This is exactly why you have a plan and you stick to it. And you stay within the bounds of that plan. And you don't try to sell or predict market tops. Remember, market's a reflection of human behavior and capital flows and money, all these different things, right? Are markets overvalued? Sure. I mean, it's any historical, everybody talks about the PE ratio on the S&P right now is 20. Technically it is. I've got a problem with that analysis because it doesn't factor into you know, one of the big situations when you're looking at PE ratio, price to earnings multiple, for those of you that aren't familiar with that, if, again, if you've heard the show, I talk about it frequently, but one of the things it doesn't reflect is the amount of stock the company's bought back. So if a company makes $100 in profit and they reduce their share count by 10%, that equals more profit per, you know, more of that $100 is going to be split between less and less shares. So your price, your earnings per share is higher. It's a lower PE because in relation to the price of the stock, there's more earnings there. The earnings are the denominator. And so, yes, on all objective measures, I don't think there's anybody out there that can argue that stocks aren't expensive. I would argue that they're even more expensive than the 21 PE that a lot of people cite, again, because of the stock buybacks. And does that mean they're going to implode imminently? No. And, you know, that's what I was just talking about. It's a fool's game. But it does mean that there are things that you need to be aware of. It does mean that there are things we want to be paying attention to. And one of the first things I want to talk about is kind of a long preamble there. But one of the first things I want to talk about was an interview I heard with Warren Buffett recently. And for those of you that don't know, I may disagree with Warren on political issues or whatever, but the guy's brilliance is undeniable. I mean, I think anybody can agree with that. I time and time again. I mean, he's the best in the business. He's a brilliant guy. And I respect and, you know, watch everything I can get my hands on and really study him, just like I do many other money managers. But in this interview recently, he said that stocks were on the cheap side, and he was talking about in relation to interest rates. And I was really bummed out when I heard the interview. And if you notice, when they tried to back him into a corner, I think it was Becky Quick from CNBC. But then she tried to back him in a corner and get more specific, say, well, what do you think? And he starts throwing out time references like 10 years from now and 30 years from now and 20 years from now that they're going to be great. And the reason I laugh when I heard this interview is one of my favorite value indicators is looking at the total market capitalization. So the total value of all stocks on any given exchange. So or index. So take the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the S&P, the NASDAQ, add it together. So all the stock in the country compared to the size of GDP. And I got that metric from Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett has always said that is his favorite metric for looking at the valuation in the stock market. Don't quote me on the number. I don't have the information right in front of me. I forgot to bring that. We're right at the highest level that metric's ever been. And then he's on the air talking about how stocks are on the cheap side. For those of you listening to the radio, you might sit there and go, oh, you're just mad because Warren Buffett showed you up or Warren Buffett disagrees with you. No, and I'm not mad. I'm perturbed because I know that's not what he thinks. Like I said to you, if you get in an argument at work or you get in a debate over, you know, family dinner or whatever about are stocks overvalued, yes. But there is nobody that can argue that they're not. And I can show you data point after data point after data point. The question is can they? The other question is it justifiable? Because there's an aspect of what Warren Buffett's talking about that is correct, that I agree with, which is when you make money free, right? If money is no longer have a cost, which is 0% interest rate, think of we live in a world now where the cost of capital is nothing, right? Now, for most consumers, it is. But for all intents and purposes, banks in a fractional reserve banking system, the cost of capital is nothing, right? In a world like that, where you hold that there, you keep those interest rates on zero for long enough time, it should equate to higher asset prices, right? It should also equate to more economic activity. And the interesting part to me is that has not occurred. And then when you look at the economic activity or the lack thereof that we've had, and then factor in the fact that we're at zero interest rates, that's alarming. And it should be to everybody. And I think the issues are pretty simple. I think we're all about against a demographic crunch. We've got the biggest generation in the history of the country exiting the workforce. So with them exits their productivity and their earnings, and their peak spending is over, right? And they're downsizing, they're cutting back. the biggest generation in history. When you live in a environment like we do, and you're a part of an economy like ours that is levered to the hilt, and when I mean that, it has never been more levered. Not in 2007, not in 1999. There is more debt in this system now than there has ever been. As a matter of fact, there's more debt in the world today than at any point in the history of mankind. And interest rates are the lowest they've ever been in all the data we can find, all the stuff that we can look at. Interest rates are the lowest point at any time in the last 5,000 years. If you don't call that being out on the tail, if you're looking at a bell-shaped curve, right? We're on the tail, meaning that we're way outside the norm. For the statisticians out there, 0% interest rates are like third standard deviation territory. And so would I expect them to boost asset prices? Certain asset prices, yeah. But there's a lot of asset prices out there that when you look at them, and if you're looking at them on a discounted cash flow model or however it is that you're looking at those cash flows, there's just ridiculous stuff out. Now, not everything. You can find value out there, but there's crazy prices. I was looking at ExxonMobil the other day. I think Exxon's sitting about a 44 PE ratio. Over the last 60 years, ExxonMobil's average PE has been right around 16. And last year was one of only a couple. Again, I don't have the number in front of me. But last year was one of only a couple years in the last 30 years that Exxon lost money. Right? And you're looking at it literally trading three times its historic valuation. Now, again, that doesn't mean everything's overpriced, but you're seeing some very strange anomalies that are getting pushed to the breaking point. And I want to finish this. I get off track. There's so much stuff to talk about, but I want to finish this talk about Buffett and address a couple of other things he said. But I want to revisit that, and I want to revisit why some of these weird anomalies are happening, and I want to dispel something, and I want to make investors conscious of something that I don't hear anybody talking about, and I think it's alarming to me. But going back to the Buffett conversation, it was, and I'm not going to try to pretend that I know why he's doing that or pretend that I understand it. I don't call Buffett. I don't talk to him. Maybe he's talking his book. Maybe what I personally believe is I think he's like me. I think he's sitting there, well, like me because we share this opinion. That's about all that we've got in common. But I think that he sees the writing on the wall. I think he sees a system right now that is being propped up by only printed money and confidence. It's a confidence game. Now, having said that, confidence games can go on for a long time. Again, this is not a market timing show. I am not. If you're a market timer, this is not your place. I'm not your guy. Okay, I'm not advocating that. What I am advocating is for people to understand what's going on. And with no hyperbole, right? We're not, you know, Chicken Little, sky is falling. We're not like, oh my gosh, put every last cent in sell your mother's house to get her money into the stock market. Where are we? We're somewhere in the middle. I think they're great assets right now. There's stocks that we own for our clients right now that I love, and I have no plan to sell regardless of what's going to go on in the market because we're buying the individual business. But that's not what is being advocated today. And this is where I'm going to get in one of the biggest misconceptions right now in investing. Most people are not doing what I was just talking about. And there's a big misconception because we hear a guy like Warren Buffett and he talks about value investing, like I said. We're buying businesses at cheap valuations that we think are going to, you know, they've got moats around their business and they've got interesting things that make them, you know, that differentiate them from everybody else. And they've got, you know, they're historically cheap. We've got all kinds of situations like that, but that's not what most people are doing today. Most people are doing something we call indexing. And I'm sure most of you are aware of the term. And everybody's out there, oh, it's all passive. You're an idiot if you do it active. And people are pulling money from hedge funds and all. I sit back and laugh and watch all of this. And I just chuckle to myself because the idea that people are buying into this whole indexing thing blindly, do I think it should be a part of it? Yeah, yeah. I'm not. But the idea that this is the answer to all the problems, or this is the what, you know, just go the index fund, it's sort of crazy to me. I think it's better than doing what a lot of the other options out there. But one of the things, and that's why I brought up ExxonMobil earlier, talking about expensive stocks out there. Oil has dropped from $110 to $52, $53, something like that. And ExxonMobil is the highest valuation in history, 3 times its long-term average. Why? Well, there's something going on in the indexing world that I don't think most people are paying attention to. And give a shout out to Raul Paul, who we've had on the show before, over there at Real Vision. These guys have talked about it. But one thing that people don't understand, and I guarantee this, and there's going to be a day where people wake up, where we will have a situation where if you own the index, you will take a much more significant loss than if you owned individual, well, assuming they're the right ones, assuming that you know what you're doing or you've got somebody handling your money that does. But there will be a situation where individual stocks, assuming they're the right ones, will be safer than owning the index, and people that own the index will take it the worst. There will be that situation. And the reason for it is all these index funds that everybody's pouring money into, they're what we call market cap weighted, which means that the biggest companies are at the top, just like the index. So if you look at, you could see a day where the NASDAQ was positive and almost every single tech company in the NASDAQ was negative, but Apple was up. Why is that? Because it's the biggest market cap weighted company on the NASDAQ because it's the biggest. So Apple disproportionately influences the index. Now, I'm not saying Apple's overvalued. We actually, well, I don't want to give endorsements of stocks on the air, but that, I'm using it as an example. I am not saying that Apple's expensive or overvalued or anything like that. But what a lot of these people don't understand is they own this index fund thinking they're really diversified and they're really safe and all that kind of stuff. But they're not the only person, right? People have been pouring money into these passive index funds at a record rate. So what has that done? When they're doing that, they're simultaneously buying a larger percentage. The biggest percentage of that purchase is being bought in the biggest companies at the top of the index. And ExxonMobil is a perfect example. It fits right in there because, again, we're talking about a stock that's, you know, one of the biggest stock companies in the world at the top of the index. So why is its PE so much higher? I don't have a concrete answer, but I think it's got a lot to do with it, passive indexing. It's the only thing that explains it. And at some point, these people that think they're well diversified, really what they've got is they've got a portfolio that's overloaded in stuff like Exxon, Google, you know, and it adds some of these tech companies get bigger and bigger and bigger. Facebook, they own a disproportionate amount of really high valued stocks. And it's kind of a weird environment we look at because when we get to the peak of markets, typically what we look for is usually the end of a bull market is mid cap and small cap stocks going through the roof, right? This market has been the opposite. The bigger and the safer companies, bizarrely enough, are the ones that have gotten bit up the most, which is probably a reflection of times that we're living in, a reflection that people are concerned about things and want to play it safe. But what I'm saying is they're not playing it safe. They're disproportionately loaded up with high multiple stocks that are trading at multiples and valuations that are far outside the norm. And I'm talking going back 80 years. So, again, not I've got clients that have passive indexes, portions of their portfolio. I'm not dogging on it. But look, if you think that that's going to be the answer to all your investing problems, look, there is no quick answer, right? You should know better than that. And give us a call at 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. And I'll just sit here like I do with all of our listeners that call into the show, and we'll have a chat for 15 minutes, and I'll tell you what we think you should do. And it's not based on my opinion. I'm going to show you data going back 80 years, and I'm going to sit there and go, look, all you're hearing about when you go to your financial advisor is passive, mutual funds, diversification, bonds. That's it. I know because I worked in several of the biggest brokerage houses for years. Yeah, they're all the same. They're not bad, but they're all pitching the same thing. You know why they're pitching that? Because they've built a narrative around it that is easy to sell. Okay? They're a business like anybody else. They're not advising you. The 60-40 portfolio that your guy at Edward Jones put you in front of, you may believe him, you may trust him, he may be a great guy, and he probably is, right? Does that portfolio mean that that portfolio is, that's the best solution for you, that gives you the best chance of winning? No, it's what they sell. You know, it's like going to McDonald's and saying, you know, you want a chef salad or something like that, right? That's not what they sell. You don't want to gain weight, you don't want to eat unhealthy, don't go to McDonald's. And these brokerage houses are the same way. That's what they sell. And they've got clients figured out, you know, convinced. I mean, I can sit there and show you with basic portfolio construction, splitting it into 4 different asset classes that we've all got, you know, stocks, U.S. treasuries, that's it, just U.S. bonds, gold, and some type of cash or an insurance product or some type of guaranteed product, the fixed index annuities that we advocate. And that if you mix that in a portfolio, I was just actually having this conversation with Dory Monson the other night when I was at his house, talking about putting together his portfolio. I can show you that over the last 80 years, that portfolio has done better than 60% stocks, 40% bonds. Why doesn't anybody push it? They don't want their brokers out there advocating anybody own gold. They don't want their brokers out there advocating anybody owns insurance products. They want the maximum amount of clients' money to go into fee-producing investment vehicles. Again, and not because they're evil. That's their business model. I don't fault them. What I'm saying is when you're living in times like these, where we know that we've got inflated stock markets, and they could keep going way higher. They keep inflating. But we know they're inflated, right? We've got bonds at the highest prices they've ever been in history. We've got real estate at all-time highs, all this stuff, right? And we've got an economy that's growing about 30, 35, 40% below its long-term growth trajectory. Something's off. And what you need to do is you need to think outside the box. You've got to look at different ways to protect your money. If you own bonds and stocks and that's your portfolio, congratulations. You've got a portfolio that's trading at basically its highest valuation in history when you combine the two asset classes together. Again, doesn't mean it's impending doom, but usually things at all-time highs, you usually should take some profits. My grandfather had a saying that I still live by to this day. Nobody ever went broke taking profits. You know what I mean? And everybody's like, oh, what if I miss out? Look, human beings think linearly, meaning that if something happens today and it happened yesterday and it happened last month and it happened last year and it happened for the last 5 years, we think linearly and we sit there and we go, okay, that's going to continue on. But it doesn't. Trees don't grow to the sky. You're going to get another shot to get in there and buy stocks. That doesn't mean go out and sell everything. Again, not advocating that, but making sure that you've got an amount of stocks that fits your long-term goals. And most importantly, fits your risk profile. If you're an investor that's sitting there and you can't take a 30% loss, or if you do take a 30% loss and you're retired and you're living on that money, and a 30% loss would put in jeopardy your long-term goals, we should look at your exposure to risk. We should build a portfolio that ensures that you can't take a 30% loss. Is that possible? Yes, we do it every day. We did it for Dory, right? There's all different kinds of ways to put different asset classes together and different structured products like the fixed index annuities we talk about and the different stocks and the different funds and building a portfolio, that's risk modeled. It's risk adjusted to fit your particular situation. And I cannot preach that enough. If you're somebody that has talked about or you've been meaning to talk to somebody, don't sit there and remember what I said 6 months down the road and sit there and go, you know, I remember this guy on the radio and I should have taken a listen to him. And meanwhile, you've lost $250,000 and you're retiring next October. Don't let that happen. And again, not saying I'm God's gift to investing or that we do anything that's, you know, we don't have a secret sauce. Well, I mean, I guess we kind of do, but these are well-known things. And like I said, the reason they're not well-known to most listeners like you is because they're tougher to explain. They're tougher to sell. It's not a neat package deal like, hey, you're 59 and you've got $500,000. That means you should have $330,000 in stocks. You should have the rest of the money in bonds and boom, there you go. Here's your financial plan. Isn't that great? Right? They're doing that because that's a package. It's easy to explain. Almost everybody knows what stocks and bonds are. Right? They don't want their brokers in there selling something else. It's a streamlined business plan. And their business is just like everybody else. And you've got to remember that when you're an investor. You've got to remember, you also have to sit there and think, you've got to go through these things and you've got to sit there and like I said, either call us, but if you're dealing with your own guy, you need to press him and see what he thinks. You need to sit there and ask him why he's still advocating that you own bonds in your account when interest rates are the lowest they've ever been in 5,000 years. You need an answer to that. And that's, I'm sitting here looking at the producer right now, just laughing because that's one of our favorite segments, right? I'm blanking out. Jerry, what's, yeah, that's right. The Financial Advisors Challenge. Yeah. And we go out and list it out. We'll do another segment. We'll do that again. But questions to ask your financial advisor. Is my portfolio suited to me? Can I take a 40 to 50% loss? Is my portfolio capable of a 40 to 50% loss? I mean, do you know these questions? Is there a way to cut? You know, the other thing we talk about indexing, right? Everybody's focused on fee reduction, which is very important. They should be. A lot of people are paying way too much, right? But again, it goes to stocks and bonds. Is there a replacement for my bonds that makes me more money, in most cases 2 to 2.5 times more money than my bonds? Yes, there is. Is it as safe as bonds? No, it's actually safer. It's guaranteed against loss. But what about the expense? Because, you know, and we're talking about fixed index annuities. I think I'm the only guy on the radio that calls them what they are for whatever reason, because people are paranoid of the word annuity. It's like, that's another segment, the dirtiest word in investing. But it is. And everybody goes, oh, annuities are expensive. No, they're not. The products that we sell our clients most of the time, unless special circumstances, but no annual fees. Meaning you got $100,000 in one of these products and the market doesn't go up or the market goes down, you don't make any money in a particular year. You look at your statement a year later and you've got $100,000 in your account. You didn't pay a dime of fees. So we can make you safer. We can increase the returns. On average, again, this is what I'm saying, the goal of the portfolio. I'm not guaranteeing investment results here. But we can de-risk the portfolio, make it less volatile. On average, when we're switching these products out for bonds, we can increase the rate of return, increase the upside, and lower the cost. And anytime you can do that, that's sort of a decision that makes itself. So stick with us. I've gone way over my time for this segment, but we're going to be right back, and we're going to talk about a conversation we had with Dory and skepticism. I think there's not enough of that out there today. Don't want to be negative. Don't want to be, you know, downtrodden, down at the mouth. But just good, healthy skepticism. We're going to talk about that. So thanks for sticking with us. This is Know Your Risk Radio on knowyourriskradio.com.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back, and thanks for sticking with us. This is Know Your Risk Radio, and I'm Zach Abraham, the Chief Investment Officer of Bulwark Capital Management. And we're going to get right back into it. Talk about skepticism. But before that, there was one in the last segment. We were talking about valuations, okay? And I want you to, I stumbled on this. I think it was on Jesse Felder's Twitter feed. For those of you that don't know, if you've got Twitter, I'm not a huge Twitter guy. But if you've got Twitter, type in Jesse Felder. He's a ex hedge fund guy, brilliant researcher. Just, he's a wealth of knowledge. I look at his Twitter feed every single day as a main source of news. And, I rip a lot of stuff off from him because he does some great research. But I said, and I think this was on his page, but, in 2011. Okay. So if we compare 2011 to 2016, if you look at the Dow Transport Index, the Dow Jones, right? We all know the Dow Jones. The Dow Jones is made up of 30 industrial companies. So you put these 30 industrial companies together and based on their share price, that makes the index of the Dow Jones. In 2011, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but in 2011, the Dow Jones companies, those 30 companies, if you put them all together, they made more money in terms of revenue than all those companies combined made in 2016. Okay, so 2016, those 30 companies made less revenue than they did in 2011. And yet the index has almost doubled in that period of time. Again, we do not time the markets. I cannot say that enough. I think a certain portion of your money should be permanently exposed to stocks. I think you should ride it up and down. I'm not disagreeing with that, okay? I want to make it very clear. People always, I hate how people boil things down. If you're a market skeptic, you're a market timer. Not true. If you're a market skeptic right now, you've got eyes. That's all it means. Okay? It's expensive. Again, not impending doom, but hey, it's expensive. Is it cheap? No way, right? Not on any metric you look at. But again, that does not mean that there's a necessary outcome. But what it does point out is what a strange anomaly. Think about that. 2011, those companies made more in revenue than they did in 2016, and yet the value of those companies has more than doubled over that same period of time. I don't know, and I look back on it, I would actually love to be able to talk to Jesse Felder about this, because he'd probably know. I would love to see if anything like that had ever happened in history, because I guarantee it hasn't. What it also points to is it points to the power of 0% interest rates, and it points to the share buybacks and the shenanigans these guys have got going on. And this leads right into our conversation about skepticism, right? Skepticism has become a dirty word. It's almost like if you're a skeptic, you're not positive. I'm a ridiculously positive person. I've never been accused of being a negative person, the funny thing. But then people hear me on the radio or people, you know, go to the seminar and they're like, you know, why are you so downbeat all the time? And I go, I'm not. It's, I own stocks. There's a lot of stocks that we're not going to sell no matter what. We're long-term value investors. But in general, I mean, if you want to sit there and tell me that the real estate market isn't propped up right now, the home ownership rate since 2007 has gone from 70% to 63%. Yet homes, which is a decrease in about 13.5%, by the way, and yet homes have surpassed their 2006 highs. Anytime I see asset prices going up and they're not being the impetus to justify those asset rises in terms of economic activity, wage growth, household formation, we don't see any of that. Why? Let me tell you why housing is going up. I'm going to tell you right now, and you can take this to the bank, okay? Housing is going up because interest rates are so low that professional money managers running mutual funds and hedge funds and private equity funds, they cannot get the yield and the safe income that they use in a portion of their portfolio. They can't get that from bonds and treasuries like they have been in the past, right? But what can they get? They can get free money. They get cheap money at 0% interest rates. So they go up and buy a few blocks of houses, and now all of a sudden, based on the average rate, the average home price to the average rent price, you're getting a return of about 5.5%, 6.5% on your money if you own a home and you're renting it out. And that's what's pushed up real estate. Right, landlords. It's the landlord real estate surge. Now, why is that a problem? Well, because it's doubly bad. You're not just dealing with a price bubble, but you're dealing with a price bubble that fewer and fewer and fewer and fewer people are benefiting from. And you will have an unbelievable. I mean, think about that. We had literally so many homes. We were making jokes about it in 2006, 2007, right after the collapse. So they're going, how in the world did we think everybody needed a home? And you think we're 8 years down the road now and that's all changed? You think all of a sudden that even though the home ownership rate has dropped by 13.5%, that there really is a home shortage? There's not a home shortage out there. There's a home shortage for sale. And home prices have gone up too high and wages haven't grown. That's the problem, right? Homes are not up for good reasons. Homes are up for bad reasons. Does that mean you should cry about it if you own a home? No, I own a home. I've done phenomenal over the last 7 years. I'm not crying about it, but I'm taking my profits. I'm listing my house in the next 2 weeks. I'm putting my money where my mouth is. But a good dose of skepticism. I don't think you can be a good investor without being a skeptic. That's what being a good investor is. You know, Tesla is a perfect example. Let's look at Tesla. And again, not giving any investment advice. Tesla makes an unbelievable product. Their cars are ridiculous. I love them. I think it's a revolutionary product. I think it's incredible what Elon Musk has done. I would love to have one of their cars. I could possibly see myself owning one at some point in the future. Would I buy the stock? No way. Wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. Why? Because I'm a skeptic. And when I start digging through that company and I start looking at the financials and the fact they're burning $3 billion a year, that they've got a market cap that is right up against Ford right now, and they've never made a profit. And that's with the backdrop of what I want to say, $10,000 to $15,000 of every car that they sell is subsidized by the government. So they get a check basically for $15,000 with every car they sell from the U.S. government, and they still can't cut a profit. They're burning $3 billion a year. And then you hear Elon Musk talk, and he's talking about new gigafactories and trips to this moon. You know what it feels like to me? Just as a warning out there, and again, I'm not giving you investment advice. You know what it feels like to me? He's always pushing the next thing, trying to keep people from focusing on what the issue is. And the issue is that he's selling these cars right and left, great cars, but he's doing it at negative $3 billion a year. Because if he floated the price of the automobiles, he wouldn't sell any. Because they're too expensive. And you got to be a skeptic. Not about the car. I think the car is phenomenal. I'm not a skeptic at all about the car. But the stock's completely different. And I see that all over the place. And I just don't think there's enough skepticism right now. Or that people think because Donald Trump's got elected that that's some magical elixir that's going to turn the economy around. We have more government debt and more private debt and more corporate debt than we have at any other period of history in the United States or in the world for that matter. Okay, could we be on the verge of an economic renaissance, if you will? Sure, anything's possible, but it would be the first time that you'd had a real growth of real economic growth, difference-making growth in an economy coming from a position where you're coming, you know, you're at maximum debt. That's typically the peak of a cycle. You don't expect to see, you know, new birth from that position. You know, the other thing that you've got to think about is every single time in U.S. history that a two-term president has left office, there's been a recession in the following 16 months. 100% of the time. Is it possible that this time doesn't follow suit? Yes, absolutely. Not saying that. I'm just saying you take a step back and you look at things and you go, look, there's a lot of room for healthy skepticism out there. And I think it's a wonderful time to, you know, of course I'm biased, but I think it's a wonderful time to listen to our message. And everybody always sits there and they always think that it's going to be this zero or nothing game. And I look at them and I go, look, the first thing you need to understand is we're trying to build a portfolio that's going to make you more money. We're not building an under your mattress portfolio. We're not advocating that people stay out of the market. What we're trying to do is generate the same types of returns, if not better, than traditional portfolios only made up of stocks and bonds. Okay, we're trying to put together portfolios that beat them, that are less risky, and that cost less. That's it. There's no shtick. We talk about annuities, and the reason I say the word like that is because there's some incredible annuity products out there. I can't believe I'm saying that, but there are, if they're used correctly. Do they have a place in your portfolio? Probably, like a bond replacement. You make more money, you take less risk, and you don't lose money as interest rates go up. It's a no-brainer. But it doesn't mean it's for everybody. But these are the types of things that I firmly believe that you need to be able to have access to as investors. You need some outside-the-box thinking. You need to think a little bit about the return of your money and not so much about the return on your money. And again, it's investors get it opposite every single time. Every single time. Right? At the top of the market right now, all you hear is craziness. Trump bump. You know, everybody's freaking out. Everybody's worried about the return on their money. And then the markets crash and they're worried about the return of their money. And no matter how many times we say it, that cycle repeats itself. I watch it. I'm blown away. I don't know why. I feel like I'm going to wake up one day and my wife always gives me a bad time. She's like, what do you expect? You've been doing this job long enough. You know the way people think. And I'm just like, you know, I know, but I would think with the proliferation of so much financial news out there now and so many different, you know, access to guys like Warren Buffett, listen to the way he talks and buying his books and, you know, all these different guys, that people would know that now. And yet at the top of market cycles, no one's worried about the return on their money. And to be a good investor, look, the part of every investor is a contrarian. Every great investor has a big contrarian streak that runs through them. Because when everybody in the crowd is going over this way, they go look over here. We got a saying that if a stock or a sector of stocks is down 90%, it doesn't mean we buy, but it does mean we stop and take a look. And it doesn't mean we buy every time. But you go, if you want to be a good investor, you go to places where nobody else will. You go look at things that nobody else wants. Why? Because if nobody else wants it, you know you can get it for a good price. And value is everything. Value isn't what you get. Value is what you pay. Right? And, you know, this goes right along with what we're talking about with the skepticism. It maddens me when I listen to these traditional asset advisors or these financial advisors sitting there and just recommending the same portfolio over and over. And the sad thing is that because the markets have done so well, especially over the last 6 months, that most people are blind to it. They're like, oh, it's working. And you look at them and go, okay, but if you'd been doing what we were doing, you'd actually be doing better now. You'd be paying less fees and you'd have way less risk in your portfolio. And that's the problem. It's, again, I hate to keep quoting Warren Buffett or keep bringing it back to Buffett, but I love his saying. He goes, you know, when the tide goes out, you find out who was swimming without their trunks on. And this time will be like, it'll be no different from all the others. We're going to have something. We'll eventually get a big market pullback because the trees don't grow to the sky. It's going to happen. And when we do, that's when people will realize, you know what? I ignored that. I should have paid closer attention. I should have looked at different alternatives. Why? Because at the top of markets, this goes back to what we were talking about earlier. At the top of markets, you need to reverse your thinking. Everybody's worried about the return on their money. They should be more concerned about the return of their money. And then at the bottom of markets, when everybody's panicking, that's when we start thinking really seriously and getting more aggressive about the return on our money. Why? Because we know by definition, it's a much better time to buy. And it really is that simple. And so I would encourage you to give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. And we can carry on this conversation. If there's something that that hit a nerve or something that brought up questions or whatever, give us a call. We'll set up a free 15-minute risk review. We'll do a side-by-side comparison of the portfolio you currently have and what we'd advise. And we'll sit there and do historical comparisons and show you, look, we're not making this up. You know, there's better ways to do things out there. And it's not just our opinion. It's also the opinion of some of the greatest money managers in the world. So there's a better way to do things. If our number one goal isn't to package a solution and be able to sell it to as many people as possible, if that's not our number one goal, then there's many different things we can do than the traditional package and make you a lot safer and lower your costs. So anyway, give us a call. Again, 866-779-RISK. 866-779-RISK. You can go to the show website, the podcast website at knowyourriskradio.com. And you'll have a link there to the firm site, Bulwark Capital Management. And you can read all about us, what we do, how we do it. And like I said, call and schedule a free 15-minute risk review. And we'll do a complimentary review of your portfolio and how we do things. And hopefully, you know, if nothing else, learn something and be armed with some more information. So we got to get running. But thanks for joining us today. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio on knowyourriskradio.com.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com. Tune in next week to Know Your Risk Radio with your host, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.